Okay, is everybody back?
Yep.
Okay, great. So, first I will ask if there are any announcements. Okay, well, I actually have one. This is Tamara. I just wanted to let everybody know you've heard on and off for the past few months that we are going to implement another Clean Network survey. We did one in spring of 2013, and we are just about to release this new one. This one will go to the Clean Network, but will also go to the larger number of listeners we also engage of climate and energy literacy stakeholders. So we'll be sending this out more broadly, and the questions, there'll be sections of the survey that will be for everybody, and there'll be ones that are specific for the Clean Network. Also, if any of you think that there's a community that we're not sending this to that you think it would be appropriate for, just let me know, and so we can get it out, because we do want to get input from the broader community of climate and energy literacy stakeholders. But sometime in the next couple of days, we will be sending that out, and it will run for about 3 weeks. Okay, any other announcements?
This is Frank Naples at NOAA. Just so you guys know, in development of the Climate Youth Engagement Initiatives under the White House Climate Education and Literacy Initiative, in partnership with Department of Energy, the Wild Center, Aztec, and other partners, we'll be sending out to the groups widely a request for case studies on climate youth engagement. It's a very simple process to submit. If you find, you know, you have one or you know one, a lot of us in the community have been developing this over the couple of years. You don't have to do it, but if you want to have that highlighted as models that you present at COP 21, please complete it. I would expect that will come out maybe later this week, early next week. But we do have to get that all buttoned up for our side event on November 30th in Paris. So look for some emails.
Okay, great. Any other announcements? Okay, if not, we will move on to our discussion for today. About, oh, I don't know, about maybe a month or 6 weeks ago, the NEEF report on environmental literacy in the U.S. was released, and it was suggested that it might be useful for our community to have a conversation about this report. And so today is the first day that we will have such a conversation. Vicki Arthur from the USDA Forest Service created a brief summary that's available. It's posted on the website, and it's been in the emails we sent out, and there's also a link there to the full report. So we have Vicki with us today, as well as Heidi McAllister, also from the USDA Forest Service, and she was a sponsor of the report and on the advisory board. And we also have Patrick Deavy from NEEF on the phone to help us to help facilitate this conversation. And so I'm going to turn it over to Vicki and Heidi in terms of giving a brief overview of this and get the conversation going.
Thanks a lot, Tamara. So this is Vicki Arthur from the Forest Service, and I was on a clean call several weeks ago where we were just cussing and discussing the state of climate change education. And it came up that we might want to develop a report that's an overview of the state of climate change education and what our recommended next steps are. And I just finished reading cover to cover the NEEF report on environmental literacy in the U.S., and I was suggesting that that be a good starting point for us in this conversation, because really there's a lot of overlap between environmental literacy in general and climate change education. So that maybe we wouldn't have to start from ground zero, but we could build from what's in that NEAF report. So it's a big report. It took me 2 days to read it. And we thought it might be good to draw some climate change slash education excerpts out of the report. So that's what you've got in the document. It's kind of a reading guide if you're just looking for climate change related items in the report. So we were hoping that everybody had a chance to kind of peruse the report at some level, and that this would be kind of like a book club around the NEAF report. So to that end, to introduce the report, we've invited in one of my bosses, Heidi McAllister from the Forest Service, is our assistant director in Conservation Ed, and then her partner from NEAF, who is very really I believe heading up the writing of this report, is Patrick Devey. And so Heidi, would you like to jump off of that?
Sure. I can just say a couple of things before I pass it off to Patrick. But I know that a couple of years ago, as we in the Forest Service and Conservation Education were kind of looking around, we were thinking, you know, it would be really helpful. One of the things that we really try and do is increase environmental literacy in our country. That is one of our major goals. And as we were, you know, sort of sitting down thinking, doing some strategic planning and looking long term, we thought, well, you know, I think that we really need to find out where we are, because there's no way you can know where you're going unless you know where you are. So that was why we decided to work with NEAF, and NEAF decided to work with us on developing an updated report on where the country was in terms of environmental literacy. And it was a huge effort with lots of different people that Patrick can tell you all about. And just designed to get us information about where we are, what we know, what we don't know, and what are some of the things that we might, where are some of the places we might want to go from here, from where we are. Another thing that we talked about as we were developing this report was that we all know that there are some really, really neat things that a lot of people are doing, and they're just some neat projects and neat key things that we have managed to do. And we just wanted to highlight those bright spots as well, because we think that there's just a lot of them out there, and we found that there were lots of really cool things happening out there. So those were some things that we wanted to highlight as well. And that said, I think I will hand it off to Patrick, who is, and I'm going to get this wrong, but a special assistant for special projects, or an assistant for special projects, or something along those lines. I'm sorry, Patrick, I should have gotten that right before I started to say something. So maybe we will let him correct it when he jumps in, and he can tell us a little bit more about the specifics of the report. So thank you for joining us, Patrick.
Sure, no problem. No problem at all. I'm happy to be talking with you guys today. As Heidi said, I'm Patrick Devey. I am the Senior Director for Special Projects at NEAF. So you got it mostly right there, Heidi.
Okay.
And as Senior Director, I kind of take on projects that come our way that don't maybe have direct home at NEAF, and this was one of them. This project started a few years ago with the idea that, as Heidi said, we wanted to see where the state of environmental education was. We knew lots of great things were happening. We knew research had happened, and we wanted to see where people were, what challenges they had been facing, what they had learned from them, and how they were tackling them, and then use that as a springboard to talk about what the future may be, what the future challenges may be, and what the future opportunities are. So that was the perspective with which we entered in doing this report. And it is an extensive report. There was a lot of research done on what was happening and where the current trends were. And so with so much going on, we really had to look at it from a broad perspective. Now, so from that perspective, what's important to understand about NEEF and about this report is that we look at environmental literacy as a lifelong thing. We want to talk to you. We want to impact your kids who are in their classrooms and get them outside. And we also want environmental education to be reaching you at work while you're watching TV with weathercasters, while you're at the doctor's office, and so on. And so we took that broad perspective and looked at the different things happening, which gave us the structure for the report. First, starting off trying to get a handle around what environmental education and environmental literacy is, and then looking how it's being used in technology, in the education system, in our natural landscapes, what the big issues were, the big threats facing us, and how we were going to build the field with these different contexts in mind and build more sustainable communities that take into account the environment as they grow. And then what conclusions we have as a result of that. And climate was certainly a part of the report, as Vicki indicated in what she sent out. It is spread throughout, though there's not a specific chapter on it. It is talked about throughout the report in these different constructs for each chapter, whether it be the great outdoors or whether it be technology. It has been included throughout. And the conclusions that we came to in seeing what was happening and where we were going was a focus on innovation within environmental education and how we can continue to be ahead of the game of how people are using environmental education and where it can really be impactful beyond the normal curriculum aspects, which are very important, that it has been associated with thus far. How we can collaborate and connect for the kind of impact that we need to see. There are so many green STEM initiatives happening nowadays that collaboration and that connect across those initiatives is going to become more and more important. We talk about strengthening the core and how environmental education needs to be seen differently by funders and talked about differently and really seen as a core tool and people understanding the impact that they have and then making an impact on that attitude and their actions with the knowledge that they are gaining. And we talk about new audiences and how environmental education needs to have a broader brush, whether it be in the age range or in the urban versus rural community, wherever that is, looking at new audiences, new partners, people that you wouldn't necessarily think of as the traditional environmental partners who are now seeing that they need to have some kind of role and that role needs to be of substance and that we may be a community where they are finding support for the kind of stuff that they are doing, these unexpected partnerships. And so those are some of the structures that we used in putting the report together and some of the conclusions. And that is a broad overview of a very in-depth report. And so I didn't want to go into too much detail on it. But Heidi and Vicki, is that a good overview, or is there more that I can give someplace else?
Yeah, I think that's a good place to start. You know, the discussion originally was, well, we ought to do something similar for climate change. So I was thinking that that's where the highlights piece was built, to help us tune into, yeah. Well, where do you leave off, and we could start with something.
Let me talk a little bit about how we see the future of this report. We see this as a living document.
Can you talk just a little bit more about how it came to be before you talk about the next steps?
Sure. When you say how it came to be, kind of what the...
like what work went into it?
What work went into it? Okay, so in building the report, the first step was putting together an advisory committee that really helped us figure out what approach we wanted to take. Originally, it wasn't going to be a report, and actually it was a few years back, and I can't remember the exact form it was going to be, but it's going to be more interactive. And in the end, we decided that it needed to be a report, that we needed to separate it. We needed to have a report for the community and then have a different venue for interaction. And so that's how we kind of came to the conclusion that this report needed to happen in this more traditional format. And the advisory committee helped guide us on where to look, where the research was happening, where the interesting things were happening. And then we hired a writer and a research team. That writer was Judy Brouse, who is the executive director at the NAAEE, North American Association for Environmental Education. And she and her research team really put the first draft together. And then we built from there and figured out what were the chapters and the conclusions we wanted to put in there, where did we want to focus, and it became a team effort between her team of writing and researching and our team of on-the-ground knowledge of lifelong environmental education and the trends that were happening. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
This is Tamara. There's the one thing that I think I've struggled to sort of with in a broad sense, in that I understand that individual activities can be identified as environmentally focused as opposed to others that might be climate focused. But when you talk about this general literacy, it's hard for me to say, is there something that you could say is environmental literacy that's not also climate literacy, or something that's climate literacy that's not also environmental literacy? I'm kind of getting at this initial question of whether this should be a separate report. But can you talk a little bit about, do you see a distinction at the higher level? As I said, as individual activities, there's ones that you can definitely say these are environmentally focused. There could be others that are differently focused that are reacting to climate change kinds of issues. But at the higher level, in terms of literacy, it's not clear to me where the distinction is.
And I think I would invite Heidi and Vicky with any thoughts that they have on that as well.
Go ahead, Vicky.
Sure. Well, my first thought was to have Frank take a stab at that. I'd love to hear what he says about that. Frank, my colleague from NOAA, who's worked with us on climate change ed.
You're hearing my mind whirling, are you, Vicky?
Yeah, I hear you whirling. Yeah.
Tamara's question is a really pivotal one, and I really think there's a larger reason for that answer, but I think that I was charged by NOAA to start a climate literacy focus at NOAA, and at the time we had an environmental literacy priority. And so we saw climate literacy as a piece of environmental literacy. But I think the real question here is there something that is missing when you talk about environmental literacy as opposed to environmental education? Because I think environmental literacy draws on everything that is environmental education, but I think environmental literacy draws on much more than environmental education.
Yeah, but so, my distinction is with climate literacy, your view was that climate literacy was a piece of environmental literacy, whereas I would, from my perspective, I would say exactly the opposite. And I think that the discussion about literacy and education is also an important one to have. But the distinction I was trying to get at was between climate and environment.
Well, this is Heidi just jumping into the fray. I do think that climate literacy is obviously a huge part of general environmental literacy, and it just is it is one of the major issues that our generation is facing. So that's what makes it a huge part of environmental literacy. I think there are other parts of environmental literacy that that are not closely related, maybe I can say that, to climate literacy. But I definitely think that climate literacy is a huge part of it, especially
today.
Can
you give me an example?
An example is obviously knowing about, for example, how to choose the machines that you have in your house, the appliances that you have in your house. That, for me, is environmental literacy that also includes climate literacy because it's use of energy and things like that. I think something.
But I want an example of environmental literacy that's not climate literacy.
Right. That's where I was going. I think environmental literacy that would not be closely related to climate literacy would be, for example, maybe understanding how environmental legislation is developed and passed. Obviously, there is a link there to climate literacy because some of that legislation will undoubtedly have to do with the climate, but a lot of it might not. That might be clean water literacy, for clean water legislation, for example. And that's something that I don't think is closely linked to climate literacy, but I would definitely call that a large part of environmental literacy.
Are you talking about the content of the legislation or the legislation itself?
I'm talking about both. I think that to be an environmentally literate citizen, I think you need to understand the content of the legislation, and I think you also need to understand the legislative process.
That's true for climate literacy also. That's why I was getting at that. I think that's true
exactly.
For the...
I think you're right. I think it just depends on what type of... I think there are very closely combined. I just think there are some pieces that might not be on the top shelf of climate literacy.
Here's the bottom line that I think that we should come from this discussion, that we go off in a corner and we're doing our climate change education work. And the environmental education, environmental literacy movement is off in a different corner. This is my point, that the two need to marry because one's work builds on the others. And ideally, we would have a continuum for a young person that does both. And
I guess
we're working
separately
at this point.
So I agree with that, Vicki. part of the impetus for my pushing hard on this is that if the question is should we have something similar to the NEAF report for climate literacy, maybe not. If there's just small, I think we can come up with things that are in one or the other, but in the overarching structure, would a whole separate report be a useful expenditure of resources to create?
Right.
Or does this environmental literacy report really capture what it is we need to think about and do.
But what's happening for me and
climate literacy
in a larger, broader vision that I'm getting out of our discussions of reports is just that our work should be overlapping more closely with that world.
Mm-hmm.
Between those two worlds, because we're just looking at it like we do climate education, period. And that we ought to start looking for ways to network our work with this movement also of environmental literacy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, Tamara, that your comments and questions are key to determining what you're talking about right now. But I'm not sure that I understand you when I heard you say that climate literacy is environmental literacy falls under that. I understand the example of the bigger umbrella is environmental literacy, and under that you can have climate change education and literacy. You can have water quality education and literacy, et cetera. Can you say a little bit more, Tamara, about how you see climate change literacy being the big umbrella and these other things fitting under that? If that's in fact what you said.
So I was surprised that you talked about it the other way, and it could just be from the perspective that I come from. I'm trained as an atmospheric scientist, and in the work that I did, the environment was a component of the things that came under the purview of my work. My work was climate change research within the context of atmospheric science. So if somebody is studying the changes in the clouds or the upper atmosphere, that comes under climate change, climate literacy, but doesn't have a direct impact on environments, at least not environments in which humans are. So it could be where you define environmental science. So it could just be from my perspective. Overall, I kind of think that they are a Venn diagram of almost overlapping circles, you know, where a vast majority of each are in each. And it could just be the perspective that I come from, I see it one way slightly, and from the perspective you come, you see it another way slightly. As I said just before, the reason I was pushing on that quite so hard is I've kind of struggled with this over the years, but usually it's really whatever the effort that I'm involved in usually addresses both to such a great extent that the distinction doesn't matter. But if we're talking about potentially thinking about doing a separate report for climate literacy, the question was, is a separate report useful if we already have this one? So that was a perspective. But I don't know if I answered your question.
I don't see where water quality, to take that example, falls under climate literacy.
Well, I guess a lot of the work I wasn't involved in this particular research itself, but how water quality, where the pollutants come into the water, a lot has to do with atmospheric dynamics and groundwater motions, and so those are all part of the climate system. And so that's why I think that it's relevant.
Human waste that goes into the water, in my mind, doesn't really have to do with the whole climate change and atmospherics
of it. Well, that's true. So like I said, in very specific activities, you can identify things that are separate. However, the other piece that I've begun to, over the past few years, is I've worked with the Clean Network and examining the wider range of climate literacy stakeholders, basically activities, businesses, organizations who have to consider climate/environmental issues in their decision-making, it has broadened. So I would start to say that these various companies that do put pollutants into the water, No, they're not doing climate change research, but they do have to understand how what they're putting in the water gets transported through the system. Well, while that is more specifically environmental science, if you were to have to give it one name, I would also say that it's climate science also, because it comes under that. I mean, climate science is a very broad, maybe I'll call it earth system science as opposed to climate science, but I see them as such overlapping, intersecting circles. There's not too much that's outside of that. But again, I agree that when you get down to very specific things, so you've identified one in which environmental issues are what you would define as outside of climate science. I could probably come up with some in which environmental science is outside of climate science. And so in that sense, one maybe is not overarching over the other, but that it is a Venn diagram of two almost completely overlapping circles.
Well, but then there's the whole political science example that was given with legislation and all.
That's relevant to climate science too.
Well, so let me throw another piece to this Venn diagram structure that I think is really important. There's two dimensions to it. One is, there are other frameworks out there. There's the sustainability, global mm-hmm. change, energy, ocean, environmental. Each one of these things are other dimensions of that Venn intersection. And we in the Clean Network carry about the energy and climate pieces, but there's a large overlap with ocean literacy. But I think another piece of this is the practitioners who are working to build that understanding across time. A lot of times, and this is a question, a lot of times the environmental education space is part of that. But environmental literacy, for me, is a much larger group of educators than environmental educators. That's just my personal perspective.
Say that again, Frank.
So when you focus on who is involved in moving forward environmental literacy, you have many more practitioners in education engagement than you do when you use the word environmental education. I don't know, Heidi and Vicky, does that resonate, or anyone else, does that resonate with you guys?
So, Frank, this is Heidi. I think I hear what you're saying is that you have this large group of educators, and a subgroup of that is environmental educators. Is that
right.
What I hear you saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course.
But when you think of environmental literacy, the amount of people that you're talking about is much larger who are working. Let me put it another way. One of the things that happened and I'm going to be quick here, so I don't want to talk too much, is when we were at the Climate Literacy Champions of Change event, we had a roundtable on educators. And one of the findings that a lot of us on the call were there, we said was this issue, climate, with all its pieces, including environment and energy and so on, requires all educators to be involved. English teachers, art teachers, social science teachers, all science teachers, not just a small bin of, oh, that's the earth science teacher, they take care of it, we're out, we're over here doing our stuff. This is all teachers, formal, informal, college, K-12, lifelong adults. And I think that one of the things I'm looking for is, and I think Tamara's getting at it, is the frame that this report covers big enough in scope to really zoom in on the totality of education required to change people's understanding of the intersection of environment, earth, and so on. That's a big, nasty question. Sorry.
Well, I can't speak for the report, but I can speak for the field of environmental education, and that includes every subject area in schools, as well as informal educators from everything from zoos and aquaria to nature centers and, boys and girls clubs and informal community education, church groups and so forth. So if you're calling educators classroom teachers, that's a very limited subset of environmental educators in my mind.
Mm-hmm. And Neef would have that same perspective, we try to train healthcare providers to be environmental educators to their patients who have asthma. We try to train weathercasters to be environmental educators to their viewers. And right now, you know, we have an initiative that's looking at employee engagement. You brought up churches. That's another possible venue. But there are other people that can, that are leaders within their community or within their profession, that can lead that, can educate whatever that constituency is if they have the proper training and education.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Right.
So when you, in the report, you call, you talk about a broad community of environmental educators. I think this is part of where we struggle when we talk about this, because there's so many frames we can use. I mean, one of the groups, you know, biodiversity loss is a huge issue for the planet, and it doesn't neatly fit anywhere. You know, the loss of soil, huge issue. You know, nitrogen is a huge issue, independent of climate and other things. So these are planetary boundary issues that show up more under the global change, which climate is one of. So, you know, I mean, this is, we get stuck in these, you know, turf areas, and I think what we're looking for is a more inclusive framework, and I think it's there. I'm just wondering what, I think that's why we're pushing so hard to actually see if it is.
And, you know, as we move forward with this report, we really see it as a living document. And we are going to, we will be launching a new website in a little while here, in which we will be inviting people to tell their stories of how they have been environmental educators, people who are, whether they're formal or informal, the challenges that they've faced, how they have faced them, the opportunities that they see, what trends they see coming down the pike. And so as a living document, it could be that there are small supplements on areas that are of high interest to people. You know, so there could be a supplement to this report, a white paper or something along that lines about climate education and about climate literacy and what that means, in which you could have that conversation where it doesn't have to be its own report, but it's a supplement to something that's larger and bigger.
That's actually, this is Tamara, this is actually, as we've had our conversation, I've sort of come to that, is that there might be an addendum report to this, because I don't really want to push or have the argument about which one's overarching over the other. I was just trying to get at what is the usefulness of creating a separate report and maybe having an addendum that specifically just addresses climate literacy and its implications that is in conjunction with this report might be more efficient and effective.
Mm-hmm. I think you need to have a meal before you get here.
I can't hear you.
Okay.
It sounds like Karen.
I don't know.
They may be talking separately, not part of the
plan.
Yep, I think that's what we're trying to get at, what you just described. You know, doesn't that make more sense than starting from scratch?
My larger point
is let's work together all the time. You know, let's start thinking about
absolutely.
How to make that happen.
Definitely. This is Heidi. I think that there is a lot of space to look at the report, see what it has, see what pieces apply to the specific work that you're doing, what pieces might be a little bit broader. And as Patrick said, there is we wanted to make this a living document to get input from other people as we go, because we do know that the field of environmental literacy and the state of environmental literacy in the country is just constantly changing. And so we didn't want this to be a solid state report that just came out and stayed the way it was. We do want input, and that piece has yet to go public, but it will soon. And that's where I can see
input. So when you talk about this being a living document, are the words that are in this PDF going to change, or will there be updates to it written? Because I see a danger in just trying to change it. But that's the question.
Yeah,
how do you see it as a living document?
I don't think it would necessarily be a change to the document itself. It would be more of an online space where you could go and learn more about a certain topic or learn more about how other people are tackling a certain topic. So it's almost like I don't want to say it's a networking space, because that denotes an interaction that we're having now that maybe wouldn't be a part of that, but a place where people could go to learn more about a certain area, to see what other people are doing. So it wouldn't be a change to this document, but it would almost be the start of the next version of the
mm-hmm.
next literacy report 5 years from now or 10 years from now or whenever that happens.
So I guess we need to see how this online environment is structured, but being able to figure out where to look if you're interested in, like, you know, let's say a year from now when there's whole bunches of contributions to it, will there be a way to sort of sort through it efficiently so that you can kind of get at the piece that you're interested in?
And we are still figuring that out. Those are the issues we're kind of wrestling with and figuring out how do we keep this alive, but not just a bunch of submissions that people made, but something that can actually be useful and that people
Maybe what you can do is you have, I'll say that I've just briefly skimmed the report, but you have sections here, and you could, as each contribution is made, connect it to a section to which it's relevant so that people kind of find it through the avenue of the structure of the report, maybe. But then there may be issues that come up separately. Like, for example, if we were to want to have a section that really talked more explicitly about climate literacy, that's not a, like you said, it's integrated through the report, it's not a specific section of the report, then that might be have to be identified separately and mentioned somehow so that people were able to find it. Anyway, that's just a suggestion.
And I think, and that's a good suggestion. Thank you. And I think, you know, when you talk about doing something like a white paper or a section devoted to one area, I think you want to be careful because you could parse it 100 different ways. You know, you could have a white paper on 100 different topics, but climate is such a current topic, such a substantive topic, and one that people are really wrestling with. Whether you're an educator in a school looking for a way to teach it, or whether you are an HR manager in an organization looking for a way to talk about your impact to your employees on climate, or a weathercaster trying to wrestle with it, there's real substance there that can be its own subset of this report, its own white paper, if that's the direction people wanted to go.
Patrick, this is Carly. I just want to ask a question that just kind of expands on that. One of the recommendations in the report is, I think, actually two tracking systems. One of projects that are supporting environmental education, and, you know, basically also sort of the evaluation in there, what's working, what's not working, how do you, you know, where are things? And then there was also the potential for a tracking system that's identifying funding sources of different forms. There's quite a bit of section in the report on how, you know, environmental education sometimes gets buried very much in some of these funding sources, and we don't really see them for what they are, or at least from a perspective as educators. So aside from this idea of an expanded living document, as you said, are there already movements to looking at these tracking systems? Because I think both of them would be extremely helpful.
We have not started movement towards that. You know, those are recommendations within the document, but they are not things that we have taken on as separate projects at this point.
Okay. Is there a group of people who are actually interested in that stuff? It's certainly true that we have some of that in place for climate literacy and climate education through TRACE and a couple of other projects. But I think it's the broader set of efforts, and certainly the document itself is filled with projects, some of which I hadn't heard of. So that was great to see new stuff and say, oh, that would be really interesting to, you know, to try to bring to, you know, to Seattle area or whatever, things that are happening in other parts of the country. So that's the real value of having those kinds of tracking systems, and you can kind of look at them in different ways. It would be interesting to integrate that into this kind of living document, and maybe that's another way of presenting it, so that these kind of projects get are linked, and you can see more information about them, and then people can say, "Gee, yeah, we looked at the stuff that they were doing in Boulder, and these are the changes we made, and we think it's still, you know, with these adaptations, it really works well in Oakland, you know, whatever." I think that'd be really interesting to create that kind of synergy.
Yeah, and I think that part of the hope in making it a living document is that those models, they can be promoted, and people can use them and integrate them into their own work.
Yep, exactly.
Go ahead, Frank.
Well, okay. There's an interesting piece to this. As I'm reading the document, one of the things I'm struggling with is the two words next to each other called environmental education. I struggle with it in climate education, because what it does is it instantaneously shrinks the focus of what we're talking about. So you read the greening of the nation's education system, and you read a very expansive, lifelong learning, rich environment where all educators are involved. But when we use the word climate education, environmental education, the people who are reading this shrink immensely. And, and I think there's a struggle there of how do we really capture the breadth, depth, and expansiveness, because we as humans on the planet are running up against a coupled system between human and natural systems that are unsustainable. That's a really big issue. It's huge. We're looking at now, we're not going to meet our carbon emissions targets for, you know, avoiding dangerous anthropogenic climate change in Paris. The announcement came out yesterday. We're going to double down. We're going to do things. But the stuff we're talking about is so big that when people shrink how they think about this, they undermine our capability and our program support and all that stuff. I think we have to figure out how to manage this. And this is not just unique to environmental education. We all share this. So I'm trying to figure out how we manage people's conceptualization as they read this stuff. I've been struggling with this for 20 years, and I think that this report suffers from some of that. So I'd be interested to see if you guys share that or don't share it.
This is Jim Bray from the American Meteorological Society. I'd like to put in a few comments, if I might. I've taught environmental science on the college level. I've taught climate change on the college level. And, I would not argue or hesitate to state that the climate literacy thing is a really, really big deal. But as a practical matter, in terms of the numbers of courses being taught, we vend educational products of various sorts, including a climate course set of materials. And as best as we can tell, there is probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 50 environmental science courses being offered to every one climate science being offered. And it actually caused us to change our strategy and actually create a abridged version of our climate science book specifically to fit into an environmental science course that is not going to be all about climate, that is going to include things like ecology and biology and resource depletion and soil issues and population issues and water and all kinds of other things besides climate. I don't know that we can manage this in the sense that you know, we tell people what should be included in an environmental science curriculum. I think we've got to make sure that we can get our foot in the door so that good climate change and climate, you know, literacy information gets into maybe a broader curriculum. But the broader curriculum is out there, and I do think that we have to live with it. That's not to say that it diminishes the importance of climate change and the importance of getting that message out, but it's kind of a similar kind of discussion that goes on between, let's say, environmental education and ecology. I think the ecologists would somehow maybe take the view that, hey, ecology really ought to be the overarching discipline, and the environmental science maybe comes under it. I'm not so sure that's true. I just take them as they are and try to make sure that AMS puts out good scientific information in whatever field, and try to make a place for our stuff in sort of a broad-based environmental literacy.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Okay,
yeah,
so
that's why we should be working together. And not viewing ourselves separately.
Yep.
Okay, so we only have a few minutes left, and we have next week we have slotted for possible follow-up discussions on this report. Based on our conversation today, is it an area of the report that might be useful to suggest people read and have our discussion next week focus on that particular part of the report, or if not a part of the report, then some other aspect related to the report?
You know, I'm trying to think of a specific area. Vicki has put together such a nice overview of the areas that involve climate, but I would, if I were to tell you to focus on certain areas, I would say it's areas that are outside of what you normally think within the environmental education or education realm. So
meaning what?
So that you will get a flavor of kind of the breadth that we look at when we look at these issues. So like there's a chapter on environmental literacy in the corporate world. There's a chapter on tectonic shifts in technology. Things like that take people out of that zone where they normally put environmental education, that classroom curriculum zone, curricular zone, and mm-hmm. push it out a bit more to think of other areas where this education is needed, and as we talked about earlier, where there are other educators waiting to take on that role.
Patrick, this is Heidi, and I think that's a wonderful way to state it. The two things that jump out at me in terms of this report and where it might have a nexus with the conversation that we've just been having are chapters eight and nine. The first one is building support for environmental education, because we've been talking a lot about what are sort of the different groups that we deal with and what are sort of the different groups that we need to deal with. And I think that fits in there very nicely. And I also think that the following chapter nine, is building sustainable communities. And that, of course, is what we're all talking about, because as Frank so succinctly put it, we are moving beyond, sustainable choices that we're making as a species. I think a big thing that faces us right now is how do we move our species back into the sustainability envelope? I mean, what can we do to make sure that we're not using more than we're putting in? So those are the two that I would think might be of most interest to this group. But, of course, any other thing that you're interested in is terrific.
Well, I think that this conversation about whether there might be an addendum to this report that focused on climate literacy, that would be the thing down the road. But maybe if we suggest people look more closely at chapters 8 and 9 and Vicky's overview with the focus on climate literacy, and try to identify those audiences or communities that would need education on these topics, basically drawing on the parallels that you've already built into the report with respect to environmental education to climate literacy. And that's just kind of an overview, but we could try to focus the conversation that way next week. Does that seem reasonable?
Yeah.
One thing I would add is that we haven't said this explicitly, but it's worth saying quickly here, is that one of the reasons why this is valuable to have this conversation now is the next national climate assessment is beginning to be designed, and there are inputs that are community inputs, not official, you know, government-sanctioned developed inputs. And I think that one of the aspects we're looking at is, can we do what we're describing here in time to be considered for the authorship to use? Because if they don't, they won't have anything to draw from in their writing. And I think that we as a community have a better chance of giving them something worth considering to incorporate than not. And I need to get a clearer picture on when that window closes out in the future sometime.
Yeah.
And I'll do that
for
next
certainly
time.
Engage. Okay, so we can certainly engage Emily in
exactly.
asking that question.
Yeah.
Yep.
Go ahead. This is just, I don't mean to interrupt the conversation, but I have another call in 1 minute, so I'm going to have to jump off. But thank you
Thank you very much for joining us. We will be ending in a minute or so also. So thank you again.
Okay. Bye-bye, everybody.
All right, great. All right, well, I'll try to frame what I said a little bit better and post it on the Clean Network teleconference page for next week. But for those of you on the phone, those three pieces, chapters 8 and 9 and Vicky's summary of the climate-related components of the report is what will be the focus of our conversation next week.
Great.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Thanks,
bye.
Bye.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Hello?